Blog Talk Radio.
Attention, Army Wives, fall in. You've come to the right place. Army Wife Talk Radio is the leading and longest-running podcast of its kind, providing the latest reports, stories, interviews, and more to encourage and empower you on your military spouse journey. For Army Wives, by Army Wives. Now, here are your hosts, the Army Wife Network core team.
Well, hello, and welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to Army Wife Talk Radio, the internet podcast designed specifically for you by the Army Wife Network core team. I'm your host, Crystal Niehaus. This is show number 637, and today is Monday, February 5th, 2018.
And I'm your co-host, Debbie Cunningham. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Our featured guest tonight is Jonathan T. Gilliam, a former Navy SEAL and FBI special agent who has dedicated his life to serving and protecting Americans. In his new book, Sheep No More, The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival, Jonathan offers his advice and expertise to help Americans everywhere see the world differently to stay safer. Visit his website at jonathantgilliam.com or connect with him on social media by going to Twitter at jgilliam_SEAL or on Facebook at Jonathan T. Gilliam.
If you're listening to our show live right now, join in our show discussion currently taking place over on Twitter. Comment on the show, ask questions of our guests, or just hang out and chat with the AWN core team. Head over to twitter.com/Army Wife Network and be sure to use hashtag Army Wife to participate. We're also adding all the links mentioned in the show in the comments section below this podcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight's show is brought to you by our AWTR show sponsor, MetLife. Military spouses do so much for their families. That's why they need life insurance. Enroll today. Learn more at militarybenefit.org or call 1-877-MBA-1020.
Well, Debbie, it's so great to be hosting with you this evening. How's life in your corner of the world? What's going on with you?
It's good. I'm excited to host with you again and just staying busy. Semester has started. Pretty full in the semester and already having tests and everything and, you know, trying to balance the whole schedule again, which is always fun and well and just planning for – you know, looking ahead at summer and things that are coming up. I've got my sister is moving finally from here. It's been a long time we've been living near each other, which doesn't always happen as a military family. So we get to live near our own families, and we've been blessed by that. But she's going to actually be taken off this summer, so it'll be a little sad for me.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I bet. It's always hard when your kids kind of leave the nest as they grow up. So, did they have big plans for the summer?
We'll see. I'd like to say we have big plans. We're trying to get up with my son, who's of course, you know, he's stationed in Italy, and we're trying to see when we can get out there. Hopefully, this spring, maybe this summer. We'll see what happens.
Awesome. Well, in my world, I see it, ballistic missiles, power outages, tsunami watches, you know, just another day in paradise. That's okay. It's all good.
You get your hands full.
Yeah, it's not quite what I was expecting when we PCS'd here, but hey, you know, you just go with the flow and It's actually kind of funny, so it's all good. I was really pleased with our very first AWN table talk live on Facebook last Friday, And we had a lot of good conversation and interaction, and we discussed avoiding isolation and connecting with others. And we had some great questions come in, and we had some great tips and advice that our followers were giving us in the comments section. So if you're listening, hop over to our Facebook page and look for AWN Table Talk Live. Well, the video, we posted the video in our Facebook feed, and just watch it and comment. Give us some ideas for suggestions for future shows. We're going to have another show February 16th, so not this coming Friday, but the following Friday. We'll go live again at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, and we're planning to cover the topic of deployment and reintegration, and that will probably be maybe a couple of shows. There's a lot to cover with that, so
absolutely, that would be exciting.
Yeah, some great information, and so start sending in your questions. info@armywifenetwork.com. So it's we're looking forward to it. So how has you're studying currently? Are you in taking college classes, right?
Yeah, taking college classes and all in anatomy and physiology right now. So that's really fun.
Oh wow, how is that going?
It's a lot of studying. Let me just say, I haven't crack the books, and you know, I was in classes last semester, but you know, doing this and a couple more classes is a little bit more than I thought. So, but it keeps you on your toes, and I'm like to be busy, so I guess I should be careful what I wish for, because I'm definitely busy, but it's good.
Oh, I hear you. I love to stay busy, and then I'll get extremely busy, and it gets chaotic, and then I'm like, not this busy. It's hard to strike a good balance, isn't it? And it just seems like there's never really a downtime anymore.
I think as we get older, and then, you know, the up-tempo of family life and, you know, everybody with their careers, it just, it is. It's hard to have that downtime and just be quiet. So it's super important to try to fit that in every day. I think last week or the week before, you guys talked about self-care, and that's definitely one of those things, is making sure we get that downtime in all the busyness.
Right, right. In fact, the question about self-care is kind of what determined the angle of our next show, because I think especially as women, we forget to take care of ourselves and how important it is. It's like when you're flying and the stewardess says, you know, in case of an emergency and we start to lose altitude, the oxygen mask will come down. Put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you put it on to your child or someone else that's sitting next to you. And we forget that principle in so many areas of our lives, that if we don't take care of ourselves, it doesn't mean that we neglect our kids or our husbands. It means that if we are depleted and empty and tired and not getting proper rest and nutrition and exercise and just time away from work and all the chaos that goes with life, that we can't adequately take care of others. So anyway, all that to say, we will be actually discussing that on the next show and giving self-care tips and ideas. So, well, Debbie, tell us what's hot on our AWN blog this week.
Absolutely. Hot on the AWN blog. Want to learn how to stress less during your next PCS? Well, great news. AWN blogger Tiffany Boyce is writing a series of PCS stress less tips. In part one, Tiffany covers step-by-step her system for keeping important documents in one place with a portable hanging file system. In part two, Tiffany tells readers about her OCONUS binder system, including pictures and lists, her divider tabs, which include everything from important documents, and these can include birth certificates, marriage certificates, social security cards, passports and extra pictures, a most recent LES, and copies of both American driver's licenses and international driver's permits. Another topic is PCS orders. Print 8 to 10 copies, and in this particular instance, have both copies of the original orders and all amended orders. Wills and POA. If you have children, you should absolutely have a will done anyway, but especially if you are traveling. Please have a power of attorney and check with JAG to see if you need any special or specific POAs. To auto, this contains any titles, insurance paperwork, shipping information, and pictures of the vehicle, household goods, any housing applications, old housing clearance paperwork, any termination of bills and or contracts with utility companies, the household goods itemized list of boxes, and worksheets of high-value items, including pictures, and several others. Great tips and advice. Looking forward to reading more in her series. If a move is in your near future, head to armywifenetwork.com and look for her series, PCS Stress Less. So, Crystal, how do you keep your important documents organized in one place when you PCS, since you just did that?
Yes, and, you know, up until this last PCS, we had always lived stateside, you know, on the mainland. So I wasn't as organized. I always had a lockbox. It's actually one of those fireproof lockboxes, and that's quite heavy with files in it and stuff. So I would just made sure I had that with me, but that wasn't feasible to take with me on an airplane, especially since many of them I needed to hand carry. And so I actually, there's this group called PCSing to Hawaii Military on Facebook that I got connected with, and they had some great tips. And one was to get one of those zipper binders. And the one I ended up getting, I got it off of Amazon, and it's just a zipper, great big binder where it has, it's a three-ring binder, so I could put tabs in there. Each tab has a purpose, you know, it's broken down much like she did in her blog post. And then it also has a pocket where you can stick file some papers too. So like when we got loose papers that I couldn't stick into my three-ring binder right away, I was able to just stick them in there, zip it all up. It had a handle where I could either carry it like a briefcase, and it also had a strap so that I could carry it like a purse. It was awesome. So I just took it on as one of my carry-ons and did it that way. Do you have some tips, or how do you do it?
You know, I'm just particular about making sure all those items are in somewhere that's, like you said, fireproof, you know, and very locked up safe. And then as far as traveling with them, I've always put them like in a notebook kind of thing with, sheet protectors to make sure everything is good to go, because of course you can't keep it, you know, fireproof as you're traveling. But at least you can keep them from getting wet and all from sticking together from humidity or whatever's going on. So, you know, it's amazing how many pieces of paper we have to keep, you know, as you keep going along and needing to keep them all in one place. You know,
right.
It's crazy. You know, and then once you settle, I know for us, we have a safe and we just put them in there and make sure they just stay in there at all times.
Oh, excellent. Well, listeners, join in the conversation. Give us your tips and advice for staying organized when you PCS. You can join in the discussion several different ways through our live Twitter chat that's going on right now in our Twitter feed. Leave a comment on the Facebook post for the show or post your tip below this podcast on blogtalkradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. And hot on AWN social media this week, we asked our fans on Facebook and Twitter about the winter weather they're experiencing in their area. So what's the weather like where you are? Tell us all about it and share a pic. We'd love to see pictures of your winter weather or not so winter weather. So join the discussion over on social media, and we'll be posting a direct link to that shortly in both our Twitter feed and in the comments section below this podcast. So Debbie, you're in North Carolina, correct?
Yes, we are.
What's winter? Have you had winter there? What's it been like?
Yeah, you know, we have. It's actually been an earlier winter here in the Fort Bragg area. It tends to, I don't know, we've been here for a while, and cold usually comes in around February. But we started getting cold in December, so we've been had a couple little brushes with snow and definitely some cold weather where people, you know, the pipes were busting. People were complaining about that in our area. So it just tended to happen a lot earlier this year. I'm not going to even ask about your weather, so you're always nice and warm over there.
Well, we're actually in the middle of rain season. And it's so funny. It's been raining like cats and dogs for the last few days just in this most recent event. And I was watching Karate Kid 2 last night with my husband, and I kept watching, and I'm like, you know, all the trees and the mountains, this all just looks so much like Hawaii. And I asked him if Okinawa, Japan, actually kind of looks like that, which he didn't know. And I thought, well, I'm going to Google. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it was shot on Oahu. Just our favorite area of the island is the northeast or the windward section of the island. And that it was shot up there, which is just, we're kind of in the middle of the island. And so not too far away, a few miles. And then they have this storm where it's raining, and I mean, just in buckets. And that is, we were watching the movie, and it was literally raining like that. And while we were watching the movie, the buckets, the sheets of rain where you couldn't see across the street. And so that was so funny. So I'll always remember that movie that way. But I mean, the weather is nice as far as temperature, but I have gotten so acclimated to it that I will need a jacket. You know, this kind of weather, I have a jacket on because it's just a little chilly. So, well, it's time now for a short commercial break. Up next is our new 6 Charlotte with your need to know news. So we'll be right back in just a moment.
The government spends billions of dollars to protect the country. Protecting your family starts at $250 a month. Find out about life insurance from Military Benefit Association. Learn more now.
You may not think of flu as a serious disease, but complications can lead to severe illness, hospitalization, and even death. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends everyone 6 months and older get a flu vaccine every year. Vaccines are available at doctor's offices, pharmacies, and local health departments. Protect yourself and your loved ones this flu season. Get a flu shot today. Learn more at cdc.gov/fightflu.
Our life, our family, our soldier. News you can use. Now with our headlines, it's time for your Army Wife Talk Radio Live News 6 report.
Welcome back to Army Wife Talk Radio. We have our new 6 Charlotte on the line, bringing us your need-to-know news. Hey, Charlotte, what have you got for us this week?
Hi, Crystal and Debbie. Did you know that obesity is contagious? According to a study that was published recently in the Pediatrics Journal of the American Medical Association, the findings offer the first evidence to support the theory that obesity spreads through social contagion. The theory is based on observations by Dr. Nicholas Christakis of Yale and James Fowler of UC San Diego, who found that various kinds of behaviors appear to be shared through social networks. They mapped out friend and family relationships among 3 generations of people who participated in the long-running Framingham Heart Study and found that things like smoking, happiness, and divorce seemed to spread as if they were contagious.
So, Charlotte, are they saying that obesity spreads like a cold or the flu, and that we can pass it on to one another?
The research isn't saying that obesity is a germ that we can control by washing our hands or using Germ-X. It's showing that we are a product of our environment. People tend to socialize with others who are similar to them. People who are in the same environment are being subjected to the same influences and reacting in similar ways. Obesity was one of the very first social contagions identified. In 2007, a study in the New England Journal of Medicine reported that if a person's friend, sibling, or spouse became obese in a certain period of time, the chances that he or she would become obese increased by 37% to 57%.
Oh, wow. Well, those numbers are staggering. Have there been any military-related studies?
Well, Ashalisha Datar of USC and Nancy Nicosia of the RAND Corp gathered data from the Military Teenagers Environments Exercise and Nutrition Study, also known as MTEENS. The kids were part of this study had a parent assigned to one of 12 bases. The obesity rates in those communities ranged from 21% in Colorado's El Paso County, which is home to Fort Carson, to 38% in Louisiana's Verdun Parish, home of Fort Polk. Datar and Nicosia pulled data on 1,111 teens and 1,314 parents. About one quarter of the teens and 75% of the adults, most of whom were active duty personnel, were either overweight or obese based on their body mass index. After adjusting for factors like age, sex, education, income, and military rank, the researchers found that members of the military families were more likely to be overweight or obese if they had been deployed to a county where obesity was more of a norm. For every 1% percentage point increase in the county's obesity rate, the odds that a teen would be overweight or obese went up 4 to 6%. In addition, for every 1 percentage point increase, the odds that a parent would be obese went up by 5%. The more those military families were exposed to their surrounding community, the more their weight status was tied to the people around them. For instance, the relationship between body mass index and the county obesity rate was stronger for teens who had lived on or near a particular Army base for more than 2 years compared with teens who were newer arrivals. Also, the link was stronger for families who lived off base than for those who lived on base. Social contagion may explain our findings, the study's authors concluded. Although this natural experiment was much better than any study Datar or Nicosia could have pulled off in the real world, it was far from perfect, they acknowledged. Living in geographic proximity to someone doesn't necessarily mean he or she is part of your social network, they wrote. Most of the height and weight data used to compute BMIs were self-reported. They stated it would have been nice to know the BMIs of the teens and parents before they relocated to the new place, as well as the county obesity rate for the base they left.
Fascinating information, Charlotte. Thanks so much for bringing us this new story. Listeners, be sure to stay tuned. After this short break, we will be talking with Jonathan Gilliam about his new book, Sheep No More, The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival. We will be right back.
Hi, everyone. It's Jack Black coming to you from the set of Jumanji.
We have to save Jumanji.
Libraries and librarians transform lives every day through digital literacy, discovery, and lifelong learning.
Let's go, people.
Yes!
There's no puzzle too tough or challenge too great.
We can help each other.
For your librarian, find the clues to solve your next quest at the library.
A message from the American Library Association's Libraries Transform campaign. And Jumanji, welcome to the jungle.
The Breastfeeding Shop,
is an authorized TRICARE provider for breast pumps and accessories, shipping to all of the USA and worldwide for TRICARE. The Breastfeeding Shop specializes in helping the military moms get the best breast pump possible and prides themselves in providing the best customer service possible, as well as a very quick turnaround time. Check out their easy-to-use online ordering form on their website at www.thebreastfeedingshop.com or call toll-free 866-255-6779. Also visit the Breastfeeding Shop on Facebook and check out the rave reviews from other moms at facebook.com/thebreastfeedingshop.
Do you have a product or service to offer our listeners? Reach thousands of military families worldwide via Army Wife Network. ArmyWifeNetwork.com has a limited number of sponsorship opportunities available. Visit ArmyWifeNetwork.com/sponsorship or email us at info@ArmyWifeNetwork.com for details.
Welcome back to Army Wife Talk Radio. I'm your host, Crystal Niehoff.
And I'm your co-host, Debbie Cunningham. Tonight, we have with us Jonathan T. Gilliam. Jonathan has dedicated his life to serving and protecting Americans. A former Navy SEAL and FBI special agent, Jonathan is now an in-demand tactical expert.
He offers his expertise as a recurring guest host on the Sean Hannity Show. In his new book, Sheep No More, The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival, Jonathan offers his advice and expertise to help Americans everywhere see the world differently to stay safer. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
It's great to be with you all. Thanks for having me.
So great to have you. Would you start us off by telling a bit about yourself and where you're calling from this evening?
Sure. I'm calling from the big city of Manhattan. I actually grew up in Arkansas, but I've been here for a little over 13 years. The FBI brought me here, and I got out of the FBI in 2013. So grew up in Arkansas, always felt as though, you know, I was being called to go into the military. And so being raised by an incredible mom with three sisters who, you know, pretty much beat me up until I was like 13, I felt that the need that I had to go do the hardest thing possible. So I chose the SEAL teams. And got a slot there, went through BUDS, and it was comparable to being raised in a house with all women who, you know, were bigger than me at certain points in my life. So I zoomed right through BUDS and went to SEAL Team 4, left there after about 5 years, and went to the Air Marshals, where I was flying undercover right after 9/11, and did that for a little while, and then went over to an amazing company. Unfortunately, it doesn't exist anymore. It got bought out by another bigger contractor, but it was AMTI, was ran by SEALs and Special Forces, people from all over the different Special Forces communities in the military. And we primarily did stuff for Homeland Security, doing threat assessments and teaching targeting to civilian groups, how they could look at themselves from an attacker's point of view, which is kind of where this book evolved from. And then within the FBI here in New York City on the criminal and counterterrorism sides of the house for 8 years.
Very busy.
Yeah.
Super busy there. So you were a Navy SEAL and an FBI special agent. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you did in those positions?
No, I cannot. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, of course I can. on the criminal side, I won't go into great detail about what groups I was looking at, but needless to say, I was I was on a squad that was very active on the ground. So we were, you know, nightly doing surveillance or following targets, doing gun buys, drug buys, and that was that way. I was there for about half of my career in the Bureau, so about four and a half years. Then I went on to run the special over to the counterterrorism side of the house with the Joint Terrorism Task Force, where I ran the special events program. So, excuse me, I'm just now getting over the flu. So, I any major event or incident that happened in New York City, I was the coordinator for that, the liaison with other law enforcement entities, with the private sector entities, and then also I did the threat assessments and the operations orders and acted as the on-scene liaison when things were actually going down. So New Year's 2010, for instance, I was running the special events program, and I was the liaison for the FBI's security that was in Times Square. And so that's when Catherine Heritage from Fox News actually came and did a story on the FBI operations in Times Square. And that's how I ended up later on in 2013 actually getting in contact with her when the Boston bombing happened. But so anyway, after working as the special events coordinator here in New York City, I was the second agent on the scene when Faisal Shahzad put the bomb in Times Square. I was there when the bomb was still there. I coordinated the forces that were coming in and where they would be staged. And then when Captain Sullenberg landed his plane on the Hudson River, I was the first agent there, and myself and another detective from the Joint Terrorism Task Force, we coordinated with the first two passengers that got off the Circle Line ferries, and we got them to the side each separately, asked them what had happened, and it turned out it was a bird strike. So we were responsible for actually being there as fast as these things as we could when these things occurred. And then in the case of Sully, we sequestered the crew, and I was the guy who told Sully that everybody was alive that night. So there's a lot of interesting experiences in the FBI, along with thousands of hours of doing surveillance on different, you know, terrorist groups, criminal groups, organized crime groups. I got to do a lot and see a lot in 8 years, for sure. And then that brings me to the media stuff, where I got in after the Boston bombing, got in touch with Catherine Heritage. After I wrote her an email, within an hour, I was doing an interview live on Fox News, and I don't think I took but two breaths, and then that just progressed into radio and more TV.
Wow. Fascinating experience. You have been, it sounds like you have a lifelong experience, really, in the military and law enforcement, so especially in regards to criminal activities. So writing this book sounds like it would be a natural for you. What was there a specific event or something that specifically led you to writing Sheep No More? And could you tell us a little bit about what the book is about?
Sure. You know, when I was in working for AMTI, the company that I talked about there a little bit, I was in charge of a course called the Soft Target Awareness Training Course, where I was given a course to go around and teach different sectors. So DHS splits the country up into different sectors. So to explain that is, like, you have religious institutions, that's one sector. Educational sector, you have tall buildings, stadiums and arenas, malls. So each one of those different soft targets. And a soft target is something that just by its nature, it's going to invite people into that area. So you can't fully fortify it as opposed to a military base where it's fully fortified. That's called a hard target. So I would take this course, and when I was initially given the course, it was a first responder course. It was written by firefighters and some cops. And I took it and revamped it and put an unconventional warfare spin on it, so I could go in and teach people from each one of these sectors how they could look at themselves from an attacker's point of view. And once they understood how attackers think and how they build target packages, they could turn around and then literally build target packages on themselves and how they would attack themselves from an attacker's point of view, and then turn around and set up proper defenses to either mitigate those circumstances, eliminate them completely if possible, and then you can determine how you're going to act if something happens. So that I sat on that, you know, for a long time, because I just didn't think that the country was ready to face the fact that terrorism was an everyday, potentially an everyday occurrence. But the longer I sat on that, I didn't think that people would actually pick up the book and read it because they were going to say, well, the chances of anything happening is slim to none because it rarely happens. But it's gotten more frequent. But what I started to see after a while was that the technique that I was coming up with and slowly developing over time could actually be used for office space. When you go to work and you want to avoid workplace sexual predators, or if you have children in your home and you want to avoid pedophiles coming into your family or breaking in, you know, if you want to avoid robbery, if you live in a city and you're a female and you live in a walk-up, you know, how you can look at your each sector of your life from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. You can look at every sector of your life, divide that up into different sectors, and then literally target yourself sector to sector to sector, and discover that, for instance, in your home, you may have only 8 attacks that can happen to you, by and large. Once you realize that, now you can mitigate all those circumstances, eliminate the ones that you can, and then come up with plans of action and how you're going to act if you get caught up in something. And so that's basically where the where we are now in this country, is that people have started to realize that things happen. You know, bad things happen, whether it's a terrorist attack or a workplace predator, and we consistently hear about this hashtag MeToo. And this book kind of goes right along with my concept of that hashtag, is that we should have a hashtag of not me, you know, where people understand where the threat is going to come from and how to deal with it, so they can say, I'm not going to be a victim. And I think that's the way our mindset needs to go. And that's why I wrote the book, by and large.
I love that, because I love the hashtag not me. I think I'm going to use that, because I think we're in a society where it's kind of become the norm or become cool to be a victim. And I don't want to be a victim. If something does happen to me, I want to be a survivor. And in fact, I would rather be a victor, you know, victorious over it, and not just even a survivor. So I really appreciate that.
These women, you know, a lot of these women that have been victimized, and by no way, shape, or form am I belittling anybody who didn't come forward. I mean, I understand the way I dealt with victims when I was in the FBI, and I see what happens to people when they are victimized. And what I would like to see is a cultural shift in the mind of where we, if something happens to you, well, first of all, I'd like to see the cultural shift to where people realize that you don't have every situation that I've heard about from Hollywood. Every single one has been avoidable. It could have been avoided. They could have taken somebody with them. They could have had their agent insist that the meetings happened in another location. But because of the culture, they were afraid to do those things. So you need a cultural shift. And the way you do that is by getting information like my book, like the hashtag not me. You get those types of things embedded in the citizenry, and eventually you'll start to see a shift where people feel like, I don't have to go to work and worry about a workplace predator, because I know what their behaviors are, and I know what I can do how the attacker thinks. I know their behaviors. And I know from a defensive standpoint, I can do this, this, and this to mitigate those circumstances. So that's the shift I think that we need to have overall. And that's why, you know, ultimately this book was written.
That's awesome. I do have a question from one of our listeners. How can someone do this without becoming paranoid or, you know, coping with anxiety?
Good question, because I get asked this a lot when I go. And I was on one TV, it's like an internet show, and the woman said, I don't know if I want to do this because I don't want to be paranoid. Well, you know, look, it's the same way as when you lock your doors at night. Do you realize why you lock your doors at night? I mean, you're mitigating a circumstance of a robber, a killer, a rapist, of somebody coming into your home and doing something that could put you or your family at harm, right? You're not paranoid about that. You go to sleep. And so this is the same thing. Once you realize the possibility of attacks and where they could happen, it's not that you should look at it from a paranoid perspective. You should look at it from an empowerment perspective, because now you know. You know, if you raise somebody in Arkansas, where I grew up in the middle of nowhere, and nothing ever happens there, and so people don't lock their doors, and then you move to New York, and you're not empowered with the knowledge that you don't leave your door unlocked in New York City, you could very well be a victim. So once you tell somebody, hey, you should lock your doors, it's not like they're going to go and hide in the corner and wait for a bus ticket to get back to Arkansas. They're going to lock their door, and now they're fully aware of the potential that could be there. And that's what I would suggest to people, is forget about this paranoid nonsense. There is power in awareness. And I'll put it to you this way, for the person who wrote that. I'm, you know, being a former SEAL, I talk about this in my book, about my experience and stuff. And the reason I bring it up again and again is not to brag, but so that people realize that their knowledge is the greatest tool in defeating a terrorist or a robber or a pedophile or a sexual predator. You already know what they want to know, what they're trying, the information they're trying to get in order to exploit to get to you. So when you become aware of how they are and how they think and how they plan attacks, you're actually more powerful than they are. And so it doesn't matter if I'm a SEAL. If I want to attack you, if you understand how I plan attacks, you're more powerful than I am, because you have more knowledge about you than I do. And that's where we have to start thinking about this stuff.
Just amazing to be. It's those simple things that we don't pay too much attention to, or we take for granted, you know?
Right.
In your book, you state about threat levels and known threats. Can you give us a little bit of information about that and how they're different?
Well, when you look at threat levels, I think it's a kind of a ridiculous this thing that we have, like when we used to have the Homeland Security color code scales and all this stuff. The reality is you're, and again, I don't want people to be paranoid, but you're constantly under a threat of potential, or excuse me, of a possibility of something happening, right? The when we look at the numbers game, when we say that this is the probability of something, right, that's a number. And that's what those threat levels are based on, are the numbers games. And I say, for instance, in New York City, where they say the threat level today is low because there's no known threats. We've never really had a terrorist attack, to my recollection, in the country when there was a known threat and the threat level was high. The threat level always goes up after the fact, right? So we need to realize that we're always under different threats in different areas. We're under threats from, you know, Mother Nature, from illness, from workplace predator, from pedophiles, all these different things. They're out there. They're lurking. So we have to realize that if you wait for a threat level to tell you that something is potentially there, you are, in effect, what I talk about in the book, falling victim to learned helplessness. And that's where you believe that the country and its government has to tell you that you're under a threat, right? But the reality is you have the power to determine where those threats are, who those threats are, why they would want to attack you, when, how, and where they would attack you. So, when I look at things like threat levels, I know on for instance, when you're in a war zone and they get some type of information coming in, and they say so there's a potential for an attack on the base today. You know, they're going to heighten up certain things because of sources brought in information. That's one thing. But when you look at your daily life and the way that majority of these things happen, whether it be sexual assault and all these things that I've listed, there is no threat level that's going to tell you that that's going to happen. Does that make sense?
That's true. That makes sense. Well,
so,
how can we assess a potential attack areas at home or in the community around us.
So that's a very good question, and I'll tell you why that's important. It's possible because, first and foremost, all cities are cookie cutters of another city. Okay, you're not going to get one city. You're not going to have one city that's going to have a particular threat that's different than another city. They all have Best Buy, just like you have, you know, a Best Buy in every city. You have movie theaters in every city. The roads are the same width, the same street signs. So the threats are the same. And once you determine what your life, the different sectors of your life, what those are, and you determine the criticalities of that, each sector, and you determine where the vulnerabilities lie, how they can be mitigated, or excuse me, how they can be exploited by the bad guys, the avenues of approach that an attacker can take. Once you discover that for each one of those sectors, it's going to be the same, predominantly the same. There may be a little, little difference here and there, but overall, it's going to be the same every place that you go to of that same sector. So, and I'll give you an example of that. When Ariana Grande concert was attacked in Manchester, and all those people were killed. I did a study on a city where I lived, and I discovered that when I look at using Google Earth or Google Maps, I can look down at a stadium and arena, and I can see, because I knew of this particular location where I'd actually been to concerts there, so I looked at it, and I could see where everybody exits and enters where the main traffic is, because the cement was different, it had a different color, it was worn down. And you could see that from a satellite image. Well, then I was getting ready to travel to another city, so I went and looked at a stadium or an arena there, and the same thing existed. So if I didn't even go to that stadium and arena until the day of an event, I would know that that is an area that I want to avoid at all costs. So because that's where people are going to come out, and that's where the majority of people are going to flow in. So if I was going to drop my kids off or if I was going to go there myself, I would either leave 10 minutes early or stay, you know, be one of the last people leaving, and I would try to find an alternative exit rather than the main area where everybody leaves. And if these people had thought about this and they had read this book or they had this awareness in their mind in Manchester, not only would the authorities had changed the way people exit and secured the outside of the building, not just the inside, but the people themselves would have been aware and said, I'm not going to go that way. And I'm going to tell my children, I'm not going to pick, you know, I want them to wait in there, or I'm going to pick them up 10 minutes early. And we're going to go and I'm going to meet them down here versus right there. So the reality is every sector of your life has this potential of awareness and avoidance. But you have to know what to look for. And you can't just say, I don't want to be paranoid. Because your life may end up depending on it.
Oh, true. That's a good point. Excellent points. Jonathan, we do need to take a quick break. When we come back, perhaps we could talk about some of the different types of attack and some ways that we can protect ourselves and our families, especially us as women.
Sure.
Listeners, don't forget, if you're listening to our show live right now, the AWN Core team is hanging out in Twitter chat. Join in the conversation and ask questions of our guest by going to twitter.com/ArmyWifeNetwork. Be sure to use #ArmyWife to participate. We'll be right back with more Army Wife Talk Radio in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Abdullah, and on behalf of the Army Surgeon General, this is your Army Medicine, Be As Healthy As You Can Be, Health Minute. This month, we're talking heart health. The best approach in managing cardiovascular disease is through aggressive prevention. Cardiovascular disease is the number one health threat to all American adults. Since cardiovascular disease takes decades to pose a significant health risk, we have an incredible opportunity to decrease or delay each individual's overall risk. evidence suggests that silent cardiovascular disease is present in up to 63% of individuals between the ages of 40 and 55. This poses an incredible challenge for patients and providers, requiring both mindfulness and vigilance when evaluating overall risk. Talk to your healthcare provider regarding your individual risk and strategies to mitigate that risk. The foundation of a winning prevention strategy includes a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, regular physical activity, maintenance of a healthy weight, and avoidance of tobacco. For more information on healthy habits, visit www.performancetriad.mil. Army Medicine, one team, one purpose, conserving the fighting strength since 1775.
Want to expand your military spouse information arsenal? ArmyWifeNetwork.com offers military family news and resources, experience and expert blogs, active social media, and much, much more. Visit ArmyWifeNetwork.com. Your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Jonathan T. Gilliam, a former Navy SEAL and FBI special agent who has dedicated his life to serving and protecting Americans. In his new book, Sheep No More, The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival, Jonathan offers his advice and expertise to help Americans everywhere see the world differently to stay safer. Jonathan, before we went to break, you were sharing with us about the different attack areas, how to assess and spot attack areas at home and in the community around us. Could you maybe tell us a bit about the different avenues that an attacker might use and what types of attacks there are?
Sure. Well, let's start first with the type of attacks. That usually precedes the avenue of approach. You have, depending on the sector, again, when we look at sectors, what we're looking at is we're looking at the every aspect of your life. You know, you wake up in the mornings and you and your family's together in the mornings, and then pretty much everybody departs the home at some point in time. So then your home is there, empty at that point in time. So let's just say that home is a sector. Let's say that your commute to work is a sector. Let's say that lunchtime is a sector. While you're at work is actually a sector. So you see where I'm going. I'm taking every aspect, and you're dividing these from the other sectors of your life, right? Because when you're at work, it's different than when you're at home. It's a completely different place. You have different threats. You have different types of attacks that could happen. Sometimes they overlap, but overall, they're still going to be different. Even if you had somebody who robbed you at home, it's going to be different than somebody who would rob you on the subway versus somebody that would rob you at work, because each one of those is going to take a different amount of effort on the part of the attacker, and a different avenue of approach and a different target package. So he's going to have to study different things. So basically, when we look at the types of attacks, it's a lot of it is dependent on the sector. And I'll give you three different types of attacks so you can see how each sector may be different. So let's start with home. You know, there's all kinds. In the book, I take a nominal home and I break it up into where eventually after I do the equation, I get to eight different types of attacks that could happen there. And one of those is a pedophile who will work their way into a home. And you have to look at pedophiles, for those of you that know military terms, you know, or you know the way the military different operative groups work. You have your special forces groups that go in and do a direct action mission where they go in and hit a target quick and get out quick. That's how a robber works, or somebody who a burglar coming into your home. When we look at the way pedophiles work, they work more like a CIA operations officer, where they'll go in and develop the family, and they will do their best to get close to the family as a whole, as a unit, and work their way in there so that they're close to these children. So you see there's two different timelines here and two different avenues of approach. You know, one of them does surveillance on the home, the burglar, the robber, and they'll do surveillance on a home, periodically driving through neighborhoods, seeing if garage doors are left open, seeing if there's certain characteristics that they can utilize, and then they will plan their attack and carry it out quick in, quick out. So with a pedophile, it's a much longer process of, and that's their game. You know, that's part of the thrill of it, is gaining the trust of the family and working their way in there to gain access to these children. So that's your home. So you're going to look at that totally different than you would when you are, let's say you are going to go to a big event, the Macy's Day, let's say the tree lighting in New York City. A lot of people, that's an event that happens, and then a lot of people come here.
Right.
Now, you could have a pickpocket that targets people, or you could have a terrorist, because at some points there's over 500,000 people in and around the area where that tree is at. So now you're looking at people who two totally different spectrums of how an attack is planned. A pickpocket has developed over a long period of time a set of skills to identify quickly people who are unaware and may have their pocket bags out and who may have big wallets in their back pocket. And so they can spot these people and shift the crowd so they can go in and get that stuff. Those are techniques that have been developed over a lifetime of criminal life, I guess you could say. And so they're able to go in and do quick operations without a lot of forethought, using the vulnerabilities that people create themselves by not being aware. On the opposite aspect of that, you have the terrorists who typically have organized groups behind them, funding them, giving them intelligence. And so when they go in, it's more like a military operation where they have literally, even if it's an easy attack, like you go in and with a knife and stab as many people as you can, typically they have chosen a spot that they know there's going to be a lot of people at, and they've done their surveillance so that they know how they can get in, what type of weapon they can get in. And so there's a lot more thought process that comes into that. Now, those are different types of attacks in different sectors. If we look at the attacker's avenue of approach, when we look at home again and we look at somebody who is a robber, their avenue of approach is going to be based on the home, and they're going to be identifying like how they can get in and get out quickly of the home. So they're going to be if they see that a window is left open nightly, they're going to derive a plan so they can get up to the home, a certain time when everybody's either away or asleep, and access that window, and then potentially use a freeway to get out of there. And that's the avenues of approach. But when you look at a pedophile is going to look at church as their avenue of approach, or they're going to use some kind of social program that you go to with your children as their avenue of approach. And so the home has nothing to do with it, even though the home is what they're wanting to get into with you and your children. They're going to utilize a long-term approach of befriending people, and they're going to identify the areas where they can approach in an area where people let their guard down. And then, when we look at a special event like the tree lighting, the terrorists are going to pick locations based on where the majority of people are, how close they can get to them without being identified by law enforcement, and there's going to be a lot more structure in there. And when we look at pickpockets, they're going to pick locations because they don't really have, a lot of the times they don't have weapons. They're just going to pick locations where tourists are and where people are kind of oblivious to what's going on. And so their avenue of approach is going to be determined on the size of the crowd and which way the crowd's moving and various things like that, which you can actually discover yourself. So you see there's different attacks, different sectors, and different avenues of approach that a lot of people who may be listening to this would have never thought about before. But now, with just a little bit of understanding, you literally can start looking at yourself from an attacker's point of view in each one of those sectors better than you could have 5 minutes ago.
Right. It's empowering.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And with that being said, you know, a majority of our audience are women. How can women best protect themselves from an attack And should our approach to protecting ourselves different from that of a man?
Well, yes, it should or it shouldn't. I mean, basically, I don't care if you're a, you know, if you're a hulk of a male or if you're a you're a very petite female. Awareness and understanding of who would attack you, why they would attack you, where the attack could take place, when that could happen, which is the critical times, and how that attack could be carried out. If you understand that, you are, it doesn't matter if you're a big guy or a petite female, your ability to manipulate the circumstances in your favor are the same. And when it comes to situations where you can't mitigate things, like you have to go to work, let's say you're a teacher in school and you have to be there every day, your understanding of what is normal and what's not, even if you're the smallest, most petite female that there is, if you're teaching and you know that in all the years you've been teaching, people who are late have a certain behavior that they, you know, they're usually kind of embarrassed. They'll walk in, they'll go to their straight to their desk. If you turn and you see after class has started, an individual open a door with a duffel bag and step into the room, lean down and start to unzip that duffel bag, I would hit him with the force of a rabid chimpanzee until I ripped the head right off of this person, because I don't care what your size is. If you understand that's not normal, and it's not normal for somebody to stop at the doorway, drop a duffel bag, and start to unzip it, I'm going to attack. Myself as the teacher, I'm going to attack. And I'd rather have to apologize later on and say, this is the way I structured this, where I noticed the threats were, where the potential was the critical areas and the critical times were located, and this was my predetermined action that I was going to take. If that person is somebody who has weapons in there, and you go and you hit them with everything you have, you're more likely going, and you're screaming and hollering, you're more likely going to foil that attack as long as you keep them from getting to those weapons and other people come in and help out. But if you're oblivious to it, and once it starts and you think you're going to fight your way out of it, chances are you're not going to be able to fight your way out of it. So do you see there that the understanding, the awareness, and having a plan to escape, evade, and if you have to fight before you get into the circumstance, that's the greatest tools you can have. And it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, big or small, you are so much more powerful when you pre-think these things.
Oh, I love that. A plan to escape, evade, and to fight. And that,
yep.
And I'm going to remember hashtag not me. You know, we are, the information only empowers us. And so by assessing threat potential, that, and rather than being anxious about it, we can be empowered by it. I love that. Where can our listeners go to get a copy of your book, Sheep No More?
It is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the other places like Books A Million, they have it as well. And then it's also available in stores. Books A Million and Barnes & Noble have it on their shelves. And I just want to let you know that I'm working already on it. When you look at the book, Chapter 3 is where it kind of goes into the first part of the book. It talks about the attacker and the attacker mindset and what an attack is. The last part of the book talks about the defender and how you defend, because the whole – The technique is called attack and defend. So Chapter 3, which is in the middle, 3, 4, and 5, teaches you how to build a target package. And I'm actually developing a log or an attack, a target package that is going to be set up so you could take it, and that you're going to be able – it's going to be like a log where you fill it out and you actually determine these things, and you can have these things in your home where you say, okay, this is where I'm most vulnerable at work. This is where I'm most vulnerable at church. This is where I'm most vulnerable at home. And your whole family will have access to that. So that's my next project that we're working on right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And you have really given us some timely and really vital advice for staying safe and protecting ourselves and our families against attack. Thank you for joining us.
You got it. Everybody be safe. And remember, hashtag not me.
Amen. Have a great evening.
You got it. You too. Take care.
Listeners, thank you for tuning in. Be sure to tune in next week, Monday, February 12th, 2018, when our featured guest will be Dr. Steven Snyder, MD, discussing his new book, Love Worth Making. It's going to be another empowering show. You don't want to miss it.
In the meantime, you can join us on ArmyWifeNetwork.com to stay connected to resources, information, expert columnists, and share the journey with many of our experienced contributors or follow along on any of our social media outlets such as Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
We are your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives. This is Army Wife Network's core team signing out.
Thank you for tuning into Army Wife Talk Radio.
The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal.
Army Wife Talk Radio is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services. And inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DOD,
any local government, or their agencies.
Until the next episode, head over to ArmyWifeNetwork.com.
Your interactive empowerment for Army Wives by Army Wives.